Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, a classic talk by historian Howard Zinn on war, government lies, and why the people need to know history. I hope you'll stay tuned. Howard Zinn was best known for his good book of 1980, A People's History of the United States. In the book, he looks at how history affects normal people, and how normal people helped create historical events. Conventional history books focus on the concerns of the powerful elites, and the book's aim is justifying the actions of the powerful elites. Zinn's book does otherwise. Zinn deeply believed that knowledge of history empowers the common people. That may explain why history courses in public schools are generally so boring and bad. The goal of public schools is to support the established power, not undercut it by empowering the common people. That's me speaking, not Zinn, but I don't think he would have disagreed. These themes come out in the talk we'll hear today. Zinn spoke at an anti-war teach-in in Boston on September 25, 2001. That's just 2 weeks after Saudi Arabians attacked and destroyed 3 buildings of the World Trade Center, according to the official narrative. Interestingly, the United States immediately began beating its war drums, not against Saudi Arabia, but against Afghanistan, which had fairly little connection to 9/11. Of course, Iraq had no connection whatsoever, and look where innocence got them. But I digress. So the WTC was attacked on September 11, Zinn spoke on September 25, and the U.S. launched its already planned invasion of Afghanistan on October 7, 12 days later. Zinn stresses the importance of knowing real history so as to inoculate ourselves against the lies of the powerful. Zinn makes 3 more key points. 1. Governments lie, especially in order to justify war. 2. Especially in wartime, checks and balances do not exist. And 3. You were not born yesterday. Don't let them treat you like you were. Unlike Howard Zinn, the U.S. war against Afghanistan seems to be immortal and permanent. Zinn died in January 2010. Here he is, still in his prime, on September 25, 2001.
You know, they, you know who they is? There's a they and a we, right? There's they and there's we. That's the world. And they want us to forget history. They want us to act as if we were born yesterday. Because if you forget history, if you were born yesterday, then you will believe anything. Any time the president or any official gets up before the microphone and tells you, well, this is what happened and this is what we must do, well, if you have no history, if you have no memory, well, how can you check up? How can you know? You know, especially when from the time you were in grade school, you were ordered to stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag, right? You were disciplined right from the start and told to obey the rules and listen to the people in authority. Notice the enormous move to obey the president. Did you see in the newspapers that, you know, our news commentators are objective people, right? You go to journalism school and they talk very seriously about objectivity, you know, rapport, and so on and so forth. And then there are these anchor people. You know, what are they anchored to, you say? They're anchored to the establishment. That's why they're called anchor people, you see. And one of these anchor people, Dan Rather, was quoted, some of you may have seen this, was quoted as saying sometime last week, I saw this in the International Herald Tribune. This is one of those one-upmanship things, you know. Who reads the International Herald Tribune? I do. You see. I saw this in the International Herald Tribune. And Dan Rather was quoted on national television as saying, he's the president. When the president says, get in line, I get in line. Now, this, you know what I immediately thought of? Totalitarianism. Really, I thought that's what we used to say, our leader has spoken. You know, get in line. You know, don't ask questions. You know, and our leaders are wise. That's, well, but what's encouraging is that there are people in this room and people in rallies and gatherings all over this country who are not getting in line. And that's very comforting for us. And they want us to forget the history of governments and the history of our government. I.F. Stone, some of you may have heard of, one of the great journalists of the 20th century. I.F. Stone would be invited to speak to journalism classes, and he would say to these people who were going to be journalists, he said, look, if you really want to be a good journalist, you just have to remember two words. Governments lie. You see? And that is a fact. I mean, not just our government, but governments lie. Does this sound like an anarchist statement? You see? And, anarchism is a philosophy. Anarchism isn't a bunch of hoodlums going around. That's not anarchism, that's the government. You see? See? But the anarchist philosophers, and I'm not talking about those few anarchists who decided to imitate the government and throw a bomb here or there, assassinate. No, the anarchists in general, anarchists as a philosophical group of as organizers, you know, Emma Goldman and Peter Kropotkin and Alexander Berkman, they understood the nature of governments. And the nature of governments is to lie. Well, for a very simple reason. Because if governments told the truth, they wouldn't be in power very long, you see. And so it's very, very important to know the history of governments. Very important to know the history of American governments, right? And to think of how, especially in wartime, there's something about wartime that brings out prevarication. Lies. But, I've never used the word prevarication publicly. I thought I would try it out tonight. You see. There's something about war that brings it out, you know. And so, the Mexican War. I know all of you remember the Mexican War. How do you think we got Texas and Colorado and Arizona and New Mexico and California? Because the Mexicans liked us and gave it to us. They're kind people. They have that Latin generosity, you see. But it was in the Mexican War that we acquired that territory, roughly half of Mexico, and we thought the Mexicans should be grateful. We didn't take all of Mexico, you see. But the Mexican War started with a lie. You know, oh, wow. There's always an incident and a lie. And so there was this incident on the border, you know, the Texas-Mexican border between the Nueces River and the Rio Grande River, and a clash, and American troops go into this disputed territory. There's a clash, people are killed, and the president, I started to say, goes before the microphone, but I guess, no, they didn't have that. President Polk announces to the country that American blood has been shed on American soil. I mean, later, many, many years later, when I heard President Bush, the elder, say, you know, they've insulted an American soldier in Panama. What are we going to do about it? Oh, no, actually, an American soldier's wife, because I forgot, he's a feminist. And this must not be allowed, you see. But, you know, they've... American blood has been shed on American soil, and soon, you know, the armies are there on their way to Mexico City. You know, and soon we have, as I say, half of Mexico. Lives. 1898, the battleship Maine is sunk in Havana Harbor. By the way, nobody asks, when they discuss, and they always, this always come, there's one thing you learn about American history. You learn about the battleship Maine. There's about seven things you learn about in American history. And one is the sinking of the Maine and how that led to the Spanish-American War. And in none of the textbooks that deal with it, and none of the classes that deal with it, certainly none of the classes that I ever attended that dealt with American history, does anybody ask the question, what was the battleship Maine doing in Havana Harbor? You know, it's like when the American destroyer was attacked, right? In Yemen, right? I didn't see any newscasters ask, what was an American destroyer doing way, way out there? You know, it's like the Gulf of, you know, and, you know, when the Gulf of Tonkin incident took place in 1964, you know, oh, wow, they've attacked American destroyers in the Gulf of Tonkin. Where is the Gulf of Tonkin? You know, it's, I guess it must be off the coast of San Francisco. Because maybe if you really showed a map and showed where the Gulf of Tonkin is, you might ask, what were American destroyers doing off the coast of Vietnam, so far from home, you see? But lies were told about that. And the lies that were told about that led immediately to Congress passing resolutions giving... Does that sound familiar? Congress passing resolutions giving the president full power to do whatever he wants to do in the Gulf of Tonkin, leading to a 10-year war in Vietnam which cost several million lives. Another lesson from history. Don't trust Congress. Don't believe in checks and balances, that stuff that you got in junior high school. Oh, what a wonderful system we have. One branch will check the other branch. You know, and that way, nothing bad can happen, you see. No. In time of war, Congress is always a flock of sheep, you see. And so is the Supreme Court. You know, the Supreme Court doesn't fool around with war, however unconstitutional the war is. Whatever rights are being taken away by the war, the Supreme Court will not defend those constitutional rights. Well, Anthony mentioned Debs. You know, the Supreme Court voted unanimously that Debs should go to jail for speaking out against the war. Hey, what about the First Amendment? Like, the members of the Supreme Court never read the First Amendment to the Constitution. Doesn't matter. It's time of war. Time of war, we all become yes men, all of them. The Congress, the Supreme Court, And so, you know, there you have, just as happened last week, you know, Congress at the time of the Gulf of Tinkham voting almost unanimously in the House, almost unanimously in the Senate, almost two dissenting votes by Senators Wayne Morse and Gruening. If people knew some history and heard about this near unanimous vote, the one heroic vote against it by the African-American congresswoman from California, Barbara Lee. If people knew some history, if the teachers gave them history, if the media gave people a little history, if anybody with power over our communications network gave people some history, they might recognize in this rush of Congress towards war, they might recognize that same subservience that Congress has always shown when it comes to matters of war. So history can be useful. History can come in handy to tell you something about governments, to tell you something about the structure of governments, to tell you something about deceptions and lies. Because if people knew that history, they wouldn't simply sit back and listen to Bush and sort of be impressed by the fact that he knows how to read, you see. The media, too. I mean, you think in a democratic country there'd be... And I remember when I was taking courses in political science, when I foolishly took courses in political science, they would talk about, very soberly, seriously, about pluralism, American pluralism, you know, where all the different divergent ideas and so on in the United States. But in times of crisis, there's no pluralism. There's one voice. And so when Bush gives that speech, as he did last week, everybody, all of the media, and all of the television experts rushing before the camera saying, what a beautiful speech. Did you notice his face? Did you notice, you know, the way he timed his words? None of them had anything to say about the substance of his speech, because that's not important, because it doesn't matter what the substance is. We'll do what he says, you see. We must learn something about the history of governments and the history of the relationship of people to governments. And must learn something about what democracy is. Democracy is not falling in line behind the president. Democracy is for people to think independently, to be skeptical of government, to check up for themselves, to look around and try to find out what's going on. And then, if they see that the government is deceiving them, to speak out as loudly as they can. That's democracy. Well, Anthony was giving you some of the history of American foreign policy, particularly with regard to Iraq. But that's a history that needs to be recalled. I'm not going to recall it all for you. It would take a while, because our foreign policy has been very full. You know, we're not Switzerland, you see. We are a great power. A great power has a lot of foreign policy, most of it bad. You see. But that the history of our foreign policy is very important, because without it, we will not understand how much animosity we have engendered in various parts of the world, not just in the Middle East, but elsewhere. We won't be able to understand that. If we don't have any history, we will live our lives with the kind of things we were taught in elementary school, that the United States is a force for democracy and liberty in the world. And we have been the Boy Scouts of the world, you know, helping countries across the street, you know. And, no. But to study the history of American foreign policy is to study the history of an imperial power, a power that took over from the British Empire and the French and the German and the Russian and the Dutch empires, and that established the most powerful empire of all after World War II, and it sent its troops all over the world and sent its ships all over the seas and intervened again and again in places so far from home, nobody could talk about it as being defensive. And in its foreign policy, consigned several million people to their deaths. And in this foreign policy, supported terrorist governments in various parts of the world, especially in Central America, especially in the Middle East. So the history of American foreign policy is a very important thing to know. And I'm stressing all this because I think that we all need to become communicators of this history. Because since the public is not getting the history in the schools, the public is not getting the history from television or from the newspapers, it then becomes the job of informed citizens to do the kind of education that is lacking in the major media and in the culture. Because, and here's what I found, that as soon as people get a little of this history, it makes sense to them. They recognize it. Now, all this stuff about, 90% of the American people support Bush, sure, you know, because their memories have been wiped out, because they're treated as if they were born yesterday. And I have found in talking to people, and I think this is important to keep in mind, that as soon as you begin telling people a little bit, reminding people a little bit, hey, remember Vietnam? Hey, remember the Gulf War and all the hoopla and the yellow ribbons and so on? And now, you know, all these people in Iraq are dead as a result of our pop. No? Remember, as soon as people learn, think a little, and learn a little history, as soon as you tell them something about the history of terrorism, and you point out to them all the times that terrorist acts have been committed, and what has happened when governments have used force to say, we are going to stamp out terrorism, just as in this case. And then there's more terrorism. And then there's more force. And of course, the force isn't called terrorism, but it is. Because any time you use violence indiscriminately and kill innocent people, you are engaging in terrorism. You see. And so we have to broaden our definition of terrorism. And we have to think that this awful thing that happened on September 11th, yes, we need to feel deeply about that and feel for the victims of that and feel for the families of that. But we also need to learn from it. And we all need also to, when we remember the scenes, remember the scenes of the people racing in shock from those fires, and the scenes of people crushed under the weight of the buildings. We ought to remember that these are scenes that have taken place in various parts of the world for a long time. And that therefore, we need to see terrorism as an international phenomenon. The United States is not the only victim, and American citizens are not the only victims of terrorism. Because if we are going to have one world, if we are really, you know, it's interesting that people talk about globalization and free flow of markets and free markets, but they don't talk about international solidarity of people. They don't say that we should consider people everywhere in the world as our brothers and sisters, that we should see the children all over the world as our children, and therefore we mustn't bomb these places. We mustn't invade these places. We mustn't use military force, because this is all one human family, and we must not do damage to any members, you know, of this family. This is, you know, just one more thing about remembering and not being born yesterday. Let's remember that the American people, Lincoln was right. You can fool some of the people all the time, all of the people some of the time, but not all of the people all of the time. Remember? And Lincoln, and he's right, because if people do wake up, people do learn, people do come to their senses after that first wave of, oh, support the government, people do look around, and their common sense and their common humanity tells them, and we've seen this in the past, tells them something is wrong here. People woke up to what was happening to black people in the South at a certain point. And then whites joined the movement, and it became a national movement. People learned after a while what was happening, what we were doing to people in Vietnam, and they woke up and we had a great national movement. So never think because of the polls, or never think because of the huzzas for the president that come from the press and the anchors. You know, never think that they are going to have it their way and the people will be fooled all of the time. We've seen movements grow from groups of people like this gathered all over the country to great national movements. We need another one today, and we may be on the way to one. Thank you.
Howard Zinn, speaking in Boston in 2001 on lies, war, and history. That recording, courtesy of radio program Unwelcome Guests. UnwelcomeGuests.net. Not to be confused with NewWorldNotes.blogspot.com, which is us. Rather, which is we. From Darkest Connecticut, we are Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non carborundum, reminding you that war is not healthy for children and other living things, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Peace.